be interviewing a special guest. So here we go with a little bit of Dana Lyons.
My grandpa was a cowboy, and his pa before him. They rode the range, killed the buffalo, and fought the Indian. But the great herd's on the prairie, and the wild frontier is gone. So to carry on my heritage, I go out and ride the lawn. Ride the lawn, ride the lawn. Here on my quarter acre lot, I sing my freedom song. Ride the lawn, ride the lawn. We'll hunt the dandelion down and whack him till he's gone. My neighbor is a slacker, and he rarely rides the lawn. He says that he likes wildflowers with dew on them at dawn. But the enemy travels quickly when the winds are strong. Next week while he's on vacation, his dandies will be gone. Ride the lawn,
ride the lawn,
ride the lawn,
ride the lawn.
Here on my quarter acre lot, I sing my freedom song. Ride the lawn,
ride the lawn,
ride the lawn. We'll hunt the dandelion down and whack him till he's gone.
Ride the lawn.
The problem with suburbia is you cannot shoot your gun. So how does one kill herds of moles who eat grass just for fun? Well, I've loaded up my arsenal with shells and ammo cans, and under cover of the fireworks, July 4th, I'll make my stand. Ride the lawn,
ride the lawn,
ride the lawn,
ride the lawn.
Here on my quarter acre lot, I sing my freedom song. Ride the lawn,
ride the lawn,
ride the lawn. We'll hunt the dandelion down and whack him till he's gone.
Ride the lawn.
My son came home from college, and he criticized my lawn. He said fertilizers, herbicides, and pesticides are wrong. Well, I'll listen to your politics and your weirdo leftist songs, but when you're under my roof, don't you dare speak ill of lawns. Ride the lawn,
ride the lawn,
ride the lawn,
ride the lawn.
Here on my quarter acre lot, I sing my freedom song. Ride the lawn,
ride the lawn,
ride the lawn. We'll hunt the dandelion down and whack him till he's gone.
Ride the lawn.
Fire, Scarecrow.
Animules out there? Yeah! We both are animals. We eat like animals. We dance like animals. We love like animals. We all are animals. We all are animals. The reptiles have some class. They slither about in the grass. They like it when the weather's damp. They party deep in the swamp. They got smooth and shiny scales, long tongues and longer tails. Ooh!
The birds do it all with their beaks. They eat and they clean and they speak. Their wings take them high in the air. And who knows what they do up there? They've got dances that can't be beat. With their feathers and rubber feet. Tweet, tweet. Let's hear some birds out there.
You are an animal.
Yeah.
We both are animals.
Yeah.
We eat like animals.
Yeah.
We dance like animals.
Yeah.
We love like animals.
Yeah.
We all are animals.
Yeah.
We all are animals.
Yeah.
The insects have some pride. The weather skeletons outside. They can live anywhere. Hot or cold, they do not care. With antennas and many eyes, they eat, reproduce, and they die.
The mammals are a wild bunch. They eat each other for lunch. They got fur as soft as silk. They feed their babies milk. They sing all the latest tunes. At night they howl at the moon. Let's have a howl welcoming back the wild wolf to Washington.
The fish dig a whole nother scene. Their whole world is aquamarine. Some are thin and some are fat. Up their faces are flat. They take transatlantic trips. They do strange things with their lips. Ew!
I see some fish lips out there. But let's not forget the plants. The plants have so much fun. They don't eat anyone. They just soak up with the sun. They rub the branches in the breeze. The dandelions tickle the trees. Oh,
I am an animal.
Yeah.
You are an animal.
Yeah.
We both are animals.
Yeah.
We eat like animals.
Yeah.
We dance like animals.
Yeah.
We love like animals.
Yeah.
We all are animals.
Yeah.
We all are animals.
Yeah.
I am an animal.
And you're back, the Wild Clearwater Country Show. That was Dana Lyons and John Seed singing I'm an Animal in front of a bunch of kids, as you could tell, in the audience. Well, I've got a special guest with me, Kitty Benzar from the Western Slope No Fee Coalition. And Kitty, can you hear me? And can I get you to talk there a little louder?
Is any better?
Oh, that's great. I think you're coming in very strong there now. So, good. All right. Well, Kitty, could you sort of introduce yourself? I know you're president of the organization and kind of some of what your mission is. And then I wanted to ask you some questions so we can talk about some of the latest issues and or threats to public lands and national forests from sort of the, I guess I would call it the recreation, spelled W-R-E-C-K, industry and whatnot. So if you could just sort of introduce yourself.
Sure. Well, I live in Durango, Colorado, southwestern Colorado, and I've been part of the organization for about 11 years now and been president of it since 2007. We formed originally around the Feed Demo program, which some people in Idaho may remember. That's when, for instance, the Sawtooth National Forest put a fee on every single trailhead on the entire national forest. So we formed originally around repealing or eliminating that program. In 2005, it was repealed, and it was replaced with a new law, and it's called the Federal Lands Recreation Enhancement Act, which the acronym for that is REA, R-E-A, Recreation Enhancement Act. And that was supposed to be more restrictive and to limit the forest to only charging for use of developed sites and not for backcountry areas or trails. Unfortunately, the Forest Service has largely not followed that law as it's written, and so for the last 9 years since it's been in place, we've been watchdogging them, finding places where they need to be in better compliance, trying to get them into compliance. A couple of lawsuits have been necessary to work on that. And now that that law is getting close to its 10-year sunset date, we're working on replacing it with something that works better both for the public and for the agency.
Oh, great. Sounds like you're doing some good work. And, of course, people know about fees around here as well. They're charged for activities routinely, such as floating on the rivers and whatnot. But there was a proposal to charge some fees for potentially some backcountry uses several years ago, and the public did not react very favorably to that, so the Forest Service did not decide to try to do that. But one of the things that we've been worried about here, as you know, is the potential privatization of campgrounds. There's a couple of avenues that I've at least seen. One is trying to turn over National Forest campgrounds to concessionaires, and the other is a sort of a new proposal to get concessionaires and or private interests to come in and upgrade campgrounds so they could eventually take them over and docks. And I wondered if you could sort of update the listeners about what's going on there.
Yeah. Keep in mind, those of you in Idaho, that this may be new to you. It might be newer to Idaho, but it's not a new thing in the National Forest System as a whole. Already, about half of all the National Forest campgrounds in the country are operated by private concessionaires.
Wow. One half?
Half the campgrounds, but even more important, something like 70 or 80% of all of the reservable campsites, the ones you can go online and reserve, which is the most desirable ones and the busiest, most popular places, those are in those campgrounds that are managed by concessionaires. So concessionaires control the vast majority of camping on our national forests already. Idaho has been a little bit slower to get on that bandwagon, but it's not a new thing nationally. It's just coming into your backyard now.
Wow.
Yes, and you've got to understand that the whole idea here is to take something that the American public owns. It's our heritage. We acquire these lands in various ways over many generations, and we have been used to paying a fee to camp in a developed campground since the early to mid-60s, but not for just general access, for camping in the campground. A while back, they started giving some of those campgrounds to little mom-and-pop concessionaire operations. One of the reasons they did that is that before Fee Demo, the money that you paid to go camping, only 15% of that stayed on the forest. The rest of it went to the general treasury. And a lot of people felt that the forest wasn't getting its fair share of that back, but they had no choice but to do it that way. Well, under Fee Demo, they were given the authority to keep that money. And so that incentive for using concessionaires was completely eliminated. Nevertheless, the concessionary industry, instead of being phased out or withering away, has in fact grown and flourished, and small mom and pops have been consolidated into larger companies, and we're on a trend now where just a very few big national concessionaire corporations are going to control the vast majority of camping on our national forests. The fact that the forests could be keeping that money and are choosing not to tells me that it's not a financial decision on their part, it's an ideological decision. They've decided that they're going to privatize and outsource recreation, And so they're just doing it, even where it doesn't make any financial sense. So I find that hard to understand, but that is what is happening. And the proposal to make that worse right now is coming from a group called the American Recreation Coalition. It's a lobbying organization that represents commercial recreation providers, a lot of them campground operators, but also some other kinds of outdoor recreation providers. They want to take that concessionaire program and grow it even far beyond what it is now. They think that our Forest Service campgrounds require makeovers, for instance. They think they're too old and antiquated because, we have old wooden picnic tables and we should have these newer, more modern picnic tables. Or maybe some of the campgrounds have, stinky old outhouses and they should have fancier, newer flush toilets. Or maybe they don't have trash pickup now and they should have dumpsters added. So that would be the kind of campground makeover that they want to be able to do. They know the Forest Service doesn't have the money to do that, but they could charge a lot more for these campgrounds if that stuff was in place. So they're offering to invest private money to provide those makeovers. They want to put things like Wi-Fi in National Forest campgrounds.
Isn't that one of the reasons people go camping, to get away from that sort of stuff?
Well, I thought so. A lot of us do. There, of course, is a market for people who want a lot of developed facilities in campgrounds. I think that market is being amply met now in the private sector by private campground operators who provide RV parks with full hookups and all the amenities. I don't see any reason why we have to do that on our national forest. I think they fulfill a different mission. But that is the direction that things are going in right now.
Wow. That's very frightening. Of course, one of the things we've noticed here in Idaho is that some of the campgrounds, even though they're ostensibly run by the Forest Service on the ground, to reserve them, you have to go through, again, a concessionaire, one of these online sites that is not the U.S. Forest Service site.
That's correct. It's a system called National Recreation Reservation System, and the website is recreation.gov, and that they have the contract to be the sole provider of recreation services to federal land management agencies. That would be the Forest Service, but also BLM, the Park Service, Fish and Wildlife, Bureau of Reclamation, Army Corps of Engineers. All of those facilities on all of those different jurisdictions are required to use the same reservation system. And it is a private company. It's a subsidiary of a company that's actually based in Canada, which in turn is a subsidiary of a large multinational based in San Diego called the Active Network. And a little bit of news on that front, the Active Network just this month has seen their stock price collapsing, and a number of analysts have come out and said that their stated financial information to their stockholders, they're on the New York Stock Exchange, has been grossly misstated, and they're starting to smell like another Enron or another Lehman Brothers, possibly in financial collapse. Meanwhile, they're the basket in which all of our federal agencies have placed their recreation eggs, the only provider for that service. So if they collapse, that calls into question what will people be left with who paid for reservations?
Well, that's a great question. I think it's ridiculous. So that's those campgrounds, in a sense, they're concessionaire, they handle the fees, but for example, how does that work under the REA law, where you've got a campground where they charge fees, but you can also reserve a specific campsite and you go through the website, but yet ostensibly it's maintained by either the Forest Service or in some cases the Forest Service has a lot of volunteer out in this part of the world, volunteer campground hosts who for free work for the Forest Service. How does that work? So if somebody pays it, the concessionaire, I guess, gets a take off the top, this company?
So here's how it works. If you make your reservation through recreation.gov, you pay the same price for the campsite as you would if you just drove in and found an empty spot. But you pay recreation.gov a $9 convenience fee for making the reservation on your behalf. The $9 stays with recreation.gov. They keep half of it as their revenue. Of the remaining half, 40% goes to the Washington office to administer that contract, and 10% goes into a fund, and the forests and the other participants can apply to that fund for grant funding. So that's what happens to your $9 reservation fee. Your camping fee, let's call it $10 to make it an easy round number, that does flow through to the forest, or if it's a concessionaire-operated campground, it flows through to the concessionaire. If the forest collects the money, then they get to keep the whole $10, and they are allowed to spend it only at the place where you paid it, in other words, to operate and maintain the campground that you use. If you pay it to a concessionaire, typically the concessionaire has a contract with the Forest Service where they pay the Forest Service a 15% of their gross as a franchise fee. So they keep 85% of your $10, $8.50, and then the remainder would go to the forest as a franchise fee. But it's even more complicated than that because they don't have to pay that franchise fee to the forest in cash. They can pay that in the form of what are called offsets, which is labor and other in-kind sorts of value that they perform. So maybe they paint the restrooms, or they sand down the picnic tables, or they don't usually do capital improvements, but they do maintenance around the place. And as long as that adds up to the 15% they owe the forest, everybody's even. It's considered paid. Meanwhile, that work that they did to make things nicer is what they use then to justify going to the forest and saying, we want to raise our fees because it's a nicer campground now and people will be willing to pay more. So you get this ratchet effect where the fees keep going up and up and up, and the public is the one that's being excluded. Everybody's making money at every step of the way. It's the public that's losing.
I have a hard time imagining why the Forest Service as an entity would even want to do this, because for the most part they don't get, if they go to the full concessionaire route, they don't get to keep much, especially if they can spend that 15% on quote unquote fixing up or improving, I guess, or maintaining, I guess is the word they use, maintaining the campground.
Well, that's absolutely right. And you have a situation coming up right now on the Clearwater Nez Perce National Forest, which I don't know if your listeners know, but they have now been combined under one management. But they're claiming that they are being forced to put all of their campgrounds under a concessionaire contract because their recreation funding has been cut in half. In fact, there was an article in January in the Spokesman.
That's a paper up in Spokane, so it's near here.
Yeah, just over the border. And the article in January said, a change in the way the northern region of the agency allocates spending on recreation shifts more money, that's our tax money, to forests that are closer to population centers. And the new formula will leave the Clearwater Nez Perce with half as much money as they've had in the recent past, and is expected to lead to some popular campgrounds being operated by vendors instead of the agency. Well, that statement makes no sense to me, because whatever they're collecting now to camp in their campgrounds, they're keeping it all. If they turn it over to concessionaire, they will not see any of it. At most, they might see 15% of it. So I don't understand how that saves them money. It simply makes no sense to me. They have some documentation out for public comment right now. There were four meetings, I believe, in your area just earlier part of this month.
Oh, yes, there were.
Uh-huh, and they're comparing the existing situation to reducing services, to increasing fees, to going to a concessionaire. And of the four options, the one that results in the largest deficit is the one of going to a concessionaire. So why are they leaning in that direction when it would cost them money at the bottom line in their budget and would lead to larger deficits in their operating expenses? But Gary, you explained to me. Did you go to one of these meetings?
Oh, I certainly
did.
Did
they explain how that makes sense?
Well, they couldn't. They said it's an option they're looking at, and I explained to them, just as you have done, why it doesn't make sense to them from a financial perspective, or it does not make sense as good public policy, because it's the privatization and the theft, in essence, of our public resources by private interests, and they're going to make money off them. And the public agency and the public as a whole is going to be left holding the bag in terms of payment to this private company. And they said, well, it's just a proposal. It's just one of the ideas we're looking at. And I said, you should just take it off the table. It makes absolutely no sense. And I said, even the committee that you have to convince
on the recreation, what they call the Recreation Resource Advisory Committee. RECRAC is the acronym, I'm sure. Of course, you're very familiar with that, Kitty, and the listeners probably aren't. But that committee met in, I believe it was May of this year. I attended that meeting, and they told the Forest Service, because this was their initial proposal, that they probably wouldn't get it through the committee because it made no sense to them either, for the very same reasons that you just explained. So I don't know what's up with the Forest Service, why they're looking at this other than, as you said, some crazy ideological agenda to privatize public resources. And that agenda has unfortunately been driven by a bipartisan ideology. We're not seeing it's not just one party that's doing it, but there's two parties now that have been in power, and they're both pushing it.
Yes, and it's gotten worse under each successive administration. It started under Clinton
and
part of Al Gore's reinventing government, and it's gotten worse. And today, you know, after 4 years under the Obama administration, it's the worst it's ever been.
Very.
So there's certainly not a partisan blame to be thrown here. Everybody's partially to blame for this. And I don't know if you saw the letter recently written by Clearwater Nez Perce Supervisor Rick Brazell.
Mm-hmm.
He just responded recently to Scotty Phillips. Some of your
mm-hmm.
listeners
Scott
may
Phillips,
know
yes. Scott Phillips, yes. Scott Phillips.
In
Haley,
Idaho.
Southern part of the state, yeah.
Right. So he wrote a letter and expressed that he didn't want it to go this way. And the supervisor responded to him and said that I, Rick Brazell, the supervisor, I do not want to go to concessionaires on the Nez Perce Clearwater National Forest. He says, I do not want to do that. He says, but our recreation budget has been cut in half in the last few years because of a budget allocation formula. Well, that article I read you a few lines from earlier said the budget allocation formula is being put out by Region 1. Well, Region 1, your listeners may not know because they don't live and breathe this stuff like you and I do. Region 1 is Montana and northern Idaho, the Idaho Panhandle. Well, the formula is supposed to direct more money to more forests that are closer to population centers. Excuse me, Montana and northern Idaho? There are population centers, of course, but I wouldn't call any forest in that region to be anything like an urban forest, such as you might see in the Wasatch Forest near Salt Lake City, or the Angeles National Forest in L.A., or even the Mount Hood National Forest near Portland. You could make a case that those are more urban forests serving a more dense population center, but there isn't anything like that in Region 1.
No, there isn't. Nowhere, even the forests closest to bigger towns like Spokane. Spokane is not nearly the size of the Wasatch Front, for example, down in Utah, and it's still a ways from the Idaho Panhandle National Forest, and the use just is nothing compared to what you would see on the Wasatch Front, or the Angeles National Forest in near Los Angeles.
Right, there's just no comparison. So none of this makes sense to me. And all we've really asked in making comments, and a lot of people have sent in comments, is please explain to us why this makes sense. And I think you're finding that your local officials really can't make sense of it because it's not logical. It's being forced on them from the top levels in the Forest Service from Washington, D.C., and it's being driven by this ideology of privatizing and commercializing and getting the federal government out of the recreation business and turning it all over to the private sector, which, as you say, I think that's just very bad public policy.
And these are public lands ostensibly owned by all Americans, and I think it is horrible policy. One of the things that listeners should know is that the Forest Service is taking comment on this proposal, and they will be doing so until November 30th. You can find information on their website. And here in the near future, there will be information on the Friends of the Clearwater website. And I would assume you've got some information on the West Slope No Fee Coalition's website as well.
Yes, we do. We have lots of information about this whole process and how it's been done. It's growing out of something called the Recreation Facilities Analysis, which started, when did that start, 2005 or 2006, something like that, where every forest inventoried and ranked every one of their developed recreation sites and set out to decide what their futures would be. And those that couldn't pay their way in fees, couldn't attract a concessionaire or a private public partner like a nonprofit, were to be closed. And, of course, under those proposals, that Nez Perce and the Clearwater together were going to decommission 9 developed recreation sites. Now, under their latest plan, they're planning to decommission 17.
Mm-hmm.
They've almost doubled that. Mr. Brazell, Supervisor Brazell, said his recreation budget has been cut in half. But if you look at the earlier reports that they did compared to what they're putting out now, their combined funding then was about 88% of what they're claiming that they have now. So it may have been reduced by the region, by this new formula, but it hasn't been cut in half. And no matter what it is, every penny they bring in at a developed campground from people who use that facility stays right there in the district ranger's budget. Why would a district ranger like Craig Trulock on the Luxa district, that he's proposing to turn over all his recreation fee sites in 2013? Why would he do that?
Well, it makes absolutely no sense unless he thinks that doesn't get even enough money from that to justify somebody going there at all, because it is not a heavily used national forest. Although those are some of the more popular recreation spots, I think in truth they'll find out that a concessionaire is not going to serve the public interest at all on those sites. So the prices will be ridiculous if they allow that to go to concessionary. It makes absolutely no sense. The proposal now is to turn all of the campgrounds on his district, on the Loxaw Ranger District, on the Loxaw River Corridor, and all the ones in the lower Selway, leading up to the Selway Bitterroot Wilderness, that are considered formal developed sites. They have some kind of non-developed. There are campgrounds that might have maybe an old outhouse, and that's it. But the ones that are considered developed sites are all scheduled to be turned over to concessionaire under this program, and people have until the 30th of November to send in comments. And Diana Jones is the person that's leading the effort. I always thought it was a little strange and odd. Part of the reason I think the Forest Service has thinking they don't have a big enough recreation budget is they've expanded what they call their developed recreation sites by including old Forest Service administrative sites are in that list, and sites that just sort of evolved into a so-called developed recreation site, including sites inside Forest Service recommended wilderness, and that shouldn't have any development at all. And I pointed that out to the Forest Service when we met. It was actually a week ago today when they were here in Moscow, and I pointed that out to them. They said, "Oh, well, yeah, maybe so." I said, "Look, if you were to take off the list of these sites that really aren't and never were recreation sites, it becomes a much more manageable idea. If these are historic sites, and let the historic programs within the agency deal with those. You don't need to, quote, turn every old lookout or ranger station into a recreation site. That just doesn't make sense. You've never gone through public involvement to do that, yet you're now you've taken on a huge load of so-called recreation sites, and you can get this under control by just doing that." And I don't know if they'll listen to me or listen to the public, but that's one of the things some people are suggesting to them.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that you have to be a local and know your forest on the ground in order to even pick up on that kind of thing. I think the folks in Washington that are forcing this down to the national forest level and down to the district level, they don't quite understand in the detail that somebody who lives and breathes there understands just how crazy this is. I was looking at their list. They've got like 3 spreadsheets out, the existing, or 4th existing condition, the increased fees condition, and so on. And the one that shows the existing condition, the largest campground on the forest is the Wilderness Gateway Campground. I'm sure you're familiar with
that. Oh, very familiar with that, yes.
Yeah, so they say that it costs $42,000 and change a year to operate and maintain that forest. To do that at 100% of the national standard costs them approximately 35 cents per person per day that stays in that campground. 35 cents. And so I don't know what the camping fee is at that campground, but it's got to be $8 or $10, doesn't it?
Yes, it is. In fact, I think it's 10. It might even be 15 now.
Okay, and it costs 35 cents per day per person for O&M. I mean, they should have plenty of money left over to operate and maintain that campground. And keep in mind, too, no concessionaire is going to even bid on taking over these campgrounds unless they can expect to make a profit on it. And so right away, if the Forest Service isn't making a profit, they're going to have to raise the rates. They're going to have to make a profit.
Right.
If a private concessionaire can operate them and make a profit, why can't the campground, that the Forest Service operate those same campgrounds, not need to make a profit and keep the rates reasonable while still covering their costs?
Well, I think they certainly can, and that's, again, you pointed out something that's interesting in those spreadsheets. Just, I have a stack of paper that I've been going through this week, just started to look at that.
It's mind-boggling, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I picked up that meeting, and that's, see, that right there is the inconsistency that I'm going to be pointing out when I send in my letter, and it's going to be a very long letter because I'm going into specific detail. But I would encourage everyone that's listening to get a hold of the Forest Service and send in some comments on this by the 30th. They're going to accept them by email, and it's an opportunity to have your voice be heard, because this proposal, it really is ridiculous. There is money out there. It's a self-imposed process from the regional office. And yes, I'm going to be meeting with the regional forester in the first part of December to talk to her specifically about this issue, seeing if we can't look at a better way in distributing recreation dollars. But as I told the Forest Service on Wednesday, I think the problem is as much the Forest Service as an agency is very top-heavy. And there's a lot of skimming going off at the top, and very little is getting down to the ground. And that's what this recreation law that was passed, although I was not happy with the fee part of it, it does allow them to keep fees there on the ground, in fact. And they should be able to do that. And if, in fact, they are getting, 35 cents, if it costs 35 cents per person per day to stay at Wilderness Gateway, then there's no way in the world that the Forest Service can't really improve the recreation facilities on the Loxaw Ranger District and be able to keep up with all their needs, if that's the case.
You're absolutely right. And one thing a lot of people don't understand is that the overall funding from Congress to the Forest Service has not, in fact, been cut over the years. It's up actually more than 70% since about 1999, 2000, 2001, that era of time. The total funding has gone up and up and up, far in excess of any inflation. But nevertheless, the money making it down to the ground at the district ranger level and even at the forest supervisor level has been going down. And that's because the overhead in Washington is completely out of control. The best estimates, and I'm sure you know, Gary, that looking at Forest Service financials is quite a bit of a rabbit hole. You jump into that and you're pretty much overwhelmed. Their financials are inscrutable, to be charitable about it. But nevertheless, the best estimate that pretty much everybody agrees on is that 80% of the tax funding they get from Congress is spent on administrative overhead, and only 20% ever actually makes it to a ranger district, which is the level where it actually interacts most closely with the public. And so, for instance, we have one forest, this would be in Region 6 in Oregon, one forest that, when they did their spreadsheet for their recreation facility analysis, they started with a congressional appropriation of $1.8 million, and they ended up with less than $150,000 available to do their developed site recreation program. 8%. That's one of the worst I've seen.
That is horrible. I mean, that's unconscionable. I mean, you'd expect that an accounting process would be accountable, but as you said, it's inscrutable. I called it Byzantine. That's what the word I use with the Forest Service. So I think both really apply to the way they do their budget accounting.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen the various GAO reports along those same lines?
Oh, yes.
Looking at the Forest Service's accounting, and there's a classic quote in there, which I'll paraphrase because I don't have it in front of me, but the GAO auditor looked at the Congressional Oversight Committee and said, the Forest Service has very little idea what its 30,000 employees do with the $6 billion a year that you give them. They simply can't account for it adequately to the GAO, which means the public and the Congress really have no idea what they're doing with the money. But we do know it's not making it to the ground to empty the trash and clean the toilets.
That's very true, and for whatever those reasons are, and it's unfortunate, but that is true. So the recreation facility analysis, that's ongoing. I would encourage the listeners to comment on that, and weigh in, because these are your national forests, and I think the prospect of turning over the management of national forests from an entity that is ostensibly accountable to the public to one that isn't, the private sector, is, you know, that's, I think that's a worse public policy decision that can be made, because that amounts to the theft of our natural heritage. I wanted to ask you, too, about some of the other proposals out there. Unfortunately, it seems to be that, to me, that the idea of sort of privatization and paying, even so linking payment and privatization together on recreation in the National Forest, this American Recreation Coalition you came up with certainly is a black hat in that process. But it is not restricted just to the recreation industry itself. It's also kind of infiltrated even the nonprofit environmental community to a certain degree, and through various forms of access, even from a non-motorized perspective. I know there's been some talk lately about some of this. I wonder if you had any updates that you could give on the whole access and privatization issue, aside from the recreation facilities analysis and the campgrounds.
Sure. You know, when we first got into this, we made a conscious decision as an organization that we were going to focus on only one issue, and that was fees for general access, you know, not for undeveloped areas. And we thought at the beginning that natural allies in that mission would come from the motorized community, you know, that feel strongly about their access issues and their freedom to roam on public land, and also from the environmental community and from the various user group communities, hiking clubs, the American Hiking Association, that sort of group. Unfortunately, none of those have really lived up to the potential to be allies, because they've allowed the agencies, I'll say they've allowed themselves to be used by the agencies to sort of balkanize the various user interests and pit us all against each other. So you get this whole motorized versus wilderness dichotomy, which I think is not... It's not a valid antagonism between those two. It's been egged on by pitting them against each other. And some of these groups, the motorized groups, were the first to do it. Some of them voluntarily said, "Let us pay a fee. We would love to pay a fee to be able to have access to these lands that we feel otherwise we're going to be shut out of." And so, you know, the Forest Service and the BLM said, "Certainly, you know, we'd be happy to do that." And they been charging them fees ever since, and the organized groups that represent that contingency have said that they love it and they're in favor of it. Now, a lot of their grassroots members on the ground might not agree with that stance, and we have quite a few of our supporters who are members of these organized groups who don't agree with their group's stance, but that's their group's stance. And now what we're seeing is that the non-motorized community is beginning to take the same approach. And so, yes, they're being put in a position of being asked, well, if you want to continue to have your access for your particular activity, are you willing to pay for it? And some of them are saying, yes, sir, you know, please may I have some more. We saw that with the Washington Trails Association when Washington State, this is state now, decided to put a fee for all access to state lands for hikers to park and go for a walk on state lands. And the Washington Trails Association was one of the biggest supporters of that, helped get it through the legislature. The legislature, in turn, dropped all tax funding for the Washington State Parks. Guess what? With the fee and no tax funding, the Washington State Parks are running out of money. Now you're seeing rangers have been laid off. People go out there and there's vandalism. There's people breaking the rules. There's, you know, loud parties and boondockers and all sorts of crime, and things are on the rise. And all because they were taken out of the public sector, where they were funded as a public good with public funds, and placed into the user pays model, which is, you know, you don't pay for it unless you use it, sort of a radical libertarian approach. And so you can kind of see what the end result of that is if you just look at Washington State Parks.
And that may be the future. I should hope not, but that is one of the potential futures, I guess, that we could see for our national forests and other public lands is going to that model. And one of the things I know you'd mentioned that before, that you felt that people you know, the balkanization, and certainly, you know, there are differences out there, but this balkanization has been made manifest through the idea of fees, is that you get each group to say, well, we'll pony up, or we'll pony up more to have this trail, or we'll pay more, and that's, you know, marketizing what is a public resource, and that it's up to the public and the agency charged to administer the public interest in deciding how that's going to be done, rather than that process, that very public process. Now we've thrown all those decisions to the market, and that seems to be the wrong way to go about making public decisions.
Yeah, I agree, and our organization has tried to stick with our mission and bring people together who probably don't agree with each other on much of anything else, but many people find the fee issue is kind of a bottom line for them. Like they can't set foot on their public lands in the general way in undeveloped areas for non-developed recreation, then they're deeply offended by that. And so they should be finding each other to be natural allies, and some of them do. And our organization tries to bring those that do together into a critical mass that can affect policy. And that's very important right now. Let me just say that right now is a very key moment in this issue, because the law that currently governs recreation fees was given a 10-year authority, and it was passed in 2004. So that 10-year authority expires in 2014. There's reasons why something has to be done well before the actual expiration date. So the year 2013 is going to be a year when Congress has to do one of three things with this law. They have to either renew it as it is, or reform it into something else, or do nothing, in which case it will expire. And there's some scary things that could happen if it's just allowed to expire. So this is a year when Congress really needs to act. We need to bring some clarity to this at the national level, and we think that there's a good chance that will happen this year. But it's going to be very important for the American people to stay engaged with their federal elected officials and let them know these public lands are very important to me. Access to them is my birthright. I want my kids to have access to them. You need to stop turning them into businesses and run them as a public service, using public employees and public funding for the general operation of our federal land.
So you've laid out sort of what the future is going to hold for this this fee authority. Can you sort of kind of give us some ideas of what you think maybe should be the direction, and what people ought to think about, at least in expressing their views to their elected leaders? And if you can kind of give us sort of also a little map of who's saying what in terms of the elected leaders, and who are some of the allies that citizens may have back in Washington from that perspective.
Happily for Idaho, both of your senators in Idaho have in the past sponsored legislation to repeal the fee authority.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Risch and Senator Crapo, along with both of the Montana senators, who are both Democrats, Senator Max Baucus and Senator John Tester, all four of them sponsored bipartisan legislation twice in two different sessions to repeal the fee law, which would have been great. Unfortunately, the powers that be did never let that bill, those two bills, get to a hearing. But now it's time, to do something before the law expires, sunsets, and so Congress works best when they're under the gun, and they do have a deadline looming of the sunset date. So this would be a good time to write a letter to Senator Risch and Senator Crapo and let them know that this is still an important issue. It wasn't much of an issue in the election, and public lands got almost no attention last year because Congress was doing nothing last year except politicking. So now that's behind us, and it really doesn't matter who won in terms of this issue because, as I say, it's always been both parties that were involved on both sides. But this is a great time to write Senators Crapo and Risch and tell them we want you to do something about this, and we want to make sure you guarantee our access and our kids' access to our national forests and our BLM land without turning them into businesses.
Good, good, good. So there are some things, and I assume as this issue unfolds that you'll be having some more information out there specifically as to what may or may not be proposed in Congress and in the various bills that may be considered. So if you can keep us updated on that, that would be greatly appreciated.
Absolutely. We do have a website. It's westernslopenofee.com. westernslopenofi.org, westernslopenofi.org, and right there on the homepage, anybody who wants to can sign up for our free email alerts. We send those out only when there's news to report or when action is needed by the citizens. So we don't overload your inbox, but we do have a way of keeping you informed in a timely fashion when something's about to break. And we'll be working as hard as we can in this coming year to find sponsorship and influence the direction that this is going to go in the future.
So that's the REA law that we've been talking about is only good until 2014.
December 8th, 2014.
And so if it expires too, but there's also some good things, I assume, in the law that you think ought to be retained.
Well, if you read the law, it's got a long list of things that fees are prohibited for.
Mm-hmm.
And if those were being observed, we would not be in nearly the fix that we're in right now. But the Forest Service has chosen not to observe those prohibitions. Unfortunately, we had to resort to litigation in one case in Arizona, which did set a legal precedent that they better start following those prohibitions, but they're dragging their feet on that. However, if those prohibitions were enforced as written, things would be a lot better, because it prohibits things like a fee just for parking your car, or a fee just for traveling through federal land without using facilities, a fee just for scenic overlooks. We do see fees for all those things, and we're fighting them, little brush fires here, there, and everywhere, all over the country. But if we could get Congress to put some teeth behind that and make sure it sticks, and it sticks nationally, that would be great. So some of that language could stay, but just be strengthened. Other parts of the law just really need to go.
Mm-hmm.
There's a section in there called special recreation permits, and the BLM in particular, and the Forest Service to a slightly lesser degree, use that as a black hole through which they push anything they want to charge a fee for that doesn't fit in any of the other categories. So that needs, some much stronger language and clarification. So, we'll be giving sideboards to the various potential sponsors, talking to them about our issues, making sure the public has a place at the table and not just the commercial recreation providers. And as I say, we'll be keeping the public informed whenever they can do something to help that along, if they just sign up for our email list or I'm sure if they keep tuning in to you or joining Friends of the Clearwater, you'll keep them informed, too.
All right. Well, Kitty, I really want to thank you for being on our show today. I would like you, to give any last advice or words to citizens out there who are very interested in the future of public lands, and especially this threat of marketizing our public lands in terms of recreation. And again, of course, give your email and website addresses again so people know how to get a hold of you.
Oh, sure. Well, I don't think I have to tell too many people in Idaho how important federal public lands are. Just as in Colorado where I live, they're a big proportion of the land in our states and a big proportion of the land in the West. And so, especially to people who live in the West, it's absolutely essential that we stand up and defend our right to access this land, because it surrounds us, and it's essential that we retain the ability to visit it. But I'll also point out that I think our public lands benefit people who even don't live anywhere near them, people who live in the metro areas or the Northeast Corridor. I think just having them as part of our American heritage is unique in the world and deserves to be retained in perpetuity. So if people care about the land, they need to step up and say so. And there's lots of ways to do that. One of them is writing your congressman. I know it sounds trite and cliched, but it's really important that you do write your elected officials. In Idaho, your elected officials hold very powerful positions in the U.S. Congress, and so you carry extra weight when you use your leverage against on them as a constituent. So all the information on how to do that is at our website, westernslopenofi.org, and sign up for our email address or email list. We also have T-shirts and stuff available if you care to donate, and you can contact us through that if you have a particular issue you'd like to consult me about. I'd be happy to make myself available, and I hope everyone out there has a happy Thanksgiving.
Well, the same to you, Kitty. Have a very good holiday and Thanksgiving, and I want to thank you so much for appearing on the Wild Clearwater Country Show. This is truly an interesting issue because it is one of those that is bipartisan from a very, very different perspective, and one that people who love the wilds, that's probably the one issue that they and our elected leaders actually here in the state sort of see eye to eye on. So I think that's very interesting.
Thanks for asking me, Gary.
Okay, thank you very much. And have a good Thanksgiving, and goodbye, Kitty.
Goodbye.
And you are listening to KRFP Moscow, the Wild Clearwater Country Show. We just got done with an interview with Kitty Benzar. She is the president of the West Slope No Fee Coalition out of Colorado, and one of the leading activists in trying to prevent the privatization of our national forests and other public lands, lands managed by the Bureau of Land Management. Well, before we go on to Between the Lines, I thought I would just a little announcement here and read some of the upcoming events that are going to be happening in and around Moscow. And I played a little bit of Dana Lyons earlier in the program, and I know Dana, he is going to be appearing here over in Pullman. So Dana Lyons, he was here in Moscow a little bit earlier, and he is going to be appearing in Pullman and at Washington State University, the Compton Union Building Auditorium. Next week, a week from today, Wednesday, November 28th, and I believe he's on the great Northwest coal train tour, trying to prevent that from happening. And so I think that'll be something that people might be very, very interested in participating in. So again, that's the 28th. Wednesday night, November 28th, the Compton Union Building Auditorium at Washington State University in Pullman. And that ought to be a very interesting show. Those of you who saw him here in Moscow a while back also had, I think, an opportunity to see a great show. Let's do a little bit of the weather here. It's about a 40% chance of showers this evening and tonight, about a low of about around freezing, 32. High today is projected to be about 42 degrees. Tomorrow, high just right near 40, 39 degrees. Mostly cloudy tomorrow night, low about 33. But there's not projected to be any precipitation. I'm just saying partly into mostly cloudy. But on Friday, the rain comes back. 60% chance of rain Friday, and then increasing to 80% Friday night, high 41, low 38. And on Saturday, a 70% chance of rain, high 41, a low 33, and 60% chance on Saturday night. And on Sunday, a 50% chance of snow, high about 36, and a low down into the 20s. We're looking about 29, almost 30 degrees. And more of the same is projected for the coming week. You are listening to KRFP Moscow. Now we go to Between the Lines.
Programming on KRFP is made possible in part by support from KRFP members and Hyperspud Sports, specializing in equipment for outdoor adventures. Hyperspud Sports is located at 402 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, call 208-883-1150 or visit hyperspud.com.
KRFP is also supported by
John's Alley Tavern, Moscow's home of live music. John's Alley is located at 114 East 6th Street in downtown Moscow.
Yo, this is the original Daddy Cool Squadron, KRFP Moscow. Yeah, let's go.
Well, Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. This week we present Phyllis Bennis of the Institute for Policy Studies, who examines the chronology of events which led to the latest escalation of violence between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. Max Richman, President and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, who explains why he believes entitlement programs should not be put on the chopping block in negotiations over the fiscal cliff. And Pablo Benson Silva, an Occupy Wall Street